Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, if your money talked, what secrets would it tell? We'll find out more about that from our money expert in just a moment. He's got lots of interesting information to share with us. Coming up around 12:30, if you've ever thought about becoming your own boss but are afraid to make the leap, or maybe you're not able to make the leap right now, Melinda Emerson, a.k.a. the Small Business Lady, joins us to share how to create and work a plan so that you can become your own boss in 12 months. First of all, let me jump right in here because I've got lots of information to cover today. We're going to introduce my first guest, Gary Surak. His book is called If Your Money Talked, What Secrets Would It Tell? He's the president of Surak Financial Services, Inc. He's got over 30 years of experience in financial planning, insurance, investments, and employee benefits, and has helped many entrepreneurs build, grow, and maintain their businesses over the years. And Gary Surak, I want to welcome you to the show today.
Oh, thank you very much, Vicki.
You were, first of all, I want to go back and look at your childhood story in a minute, because I think that's really interesting and probably a lot of us can relate to something like that. But you were cited as saying in an article that we have no memory, no money memory at all. We'll be freaked out 1 minute and more conservative with our money. But as soon as any signs of an economic upturn show up, we'll be right back to our old spending habits. Is that where we are today, Gary?
Oh, I think we've moved right there already, Vicki. I think our short-term memory loss is significant.
Yeah, it's you'd think we'd learn.
We just don't seem to get the message. It's incredible, and the message is painful, and we still don't really get it long-term.
Right, and this is one of the reasons you wrote this book, because you want us to change our money habits for good. But I want to just look at where you got your first money lessons from, because I think, like most of us, you heard conversations across the kitchen table with your parents. Your father struggled in the insurance industry until you were around 12, and then he became very successful. Talk to us a little bit about that and what kind of message that cemented in your mind about money.
Well, our conversations growing up were always about not having any money, Vicki. I mean, that's really what they circled around, and especially early in my life. And I remember, you know, we ate a lot of hot dogs and hamburgers and baked beans and macaroni and cheese, and quite frankly, that's what we ate, and that was fine. Fried bologna was real good. Realistically, we just didn't have a lot of cash, and my dad worked very hard, worked a couple jobs to create it. And so money was always discussed, but was really not about money. It was about what we weren't going to buy and what we needed, but how were we going to pay for it.
Right.
And that's really what happened.
And when did you first start? You had a similar experience to me when I first started making money, but it was for charity. Mine was Sunny Smiles. I used to sell picture books of little orphan children to raise charity when I was about 10 or 11. You had a similar experience when you were selling for the YMCA. Talk to us a little bit about that and how that kind of set you up.
Well, it was very interesting. I would go down to the YMCA on Saturdays. My mom would sort of want to get me out of the house. She had three kids, and she could ship me off. And so I would walk to the bus stop behind our house and for not much money ride downtown, have a hot dog, a soda, and watch movies. Well, one of those Saturdays that I did that, they handed out this brochure. They actually showed a little film about this camp that I thought was really interesting. And so I picked up the brochure and I brought it home. And it was about going to Camp Tippecanoe. And my mom looked at me and said, "There's no way you can afford it." And I said, "Well, I could sell YMCA mints." And my mom started laughing. And she said, "You don't even talk," which was, by the way, true.
Because you were very shy. You were very shy, right?
Yeah, painfully shy. I kind of, my best friend was me because I didn't have to talk to anyone then, so it worked out quite well. But and I still have a pretty reclusive side to me, but the reality of it was I said, "Mom," I kind of harassed her so much she finally said, "Okay, let's try it," but she thought it would be a dismal failure. But I talked her into going down to the Y, getting some mints, And the first day I got my mints, I had sold the entire case. And she was floored.
So how did that set a message in your mind? Because you say it doesn't matter whether we have money or whether we don't have money. The message we tell ourselves is the same. So what kind of message did that set in your mind at that point?
Well, it really, as a young kid, it really planted the seed that I could do something I didn't think I could do, at least no one else thought I could do. And that I had figured out a way to do something that everyone else said would be impossible for me to accomplish.
That's a great message for a kid to have.
Yeah, and I registered really quite well. And actually, and as ironic as it is, I sold more mints than anyone in that whole program and earned 2 weeks of camp instead of one and all kinds of awards. And it was kind of embarrassing, but that's what happened. So.
Interesting that you say that's kind of embarrassing, because you do say we have this relationship with money. Everybody has a relationship with it.
Oh, yes, we do. We absolutely have relationships. I was with someone today, and they have a definite relationship with money, and it's not a very good one. It's almost like a divorce. As fast as they get it, they get divorced from it. It's pretty incredible. And we do have relationships with money. We either value money or we don't, and there are reasons why we do that, and they're usually set very young in life.
Right, and I think your story is a great example there. Given that we have these stories set very young in life, why do we not learn from that and come to the realization that, hey, my relationship with money is not healthy, I need to change it? What's stopping us from doing that?
Well, there's a lot of pressures. I contend that the media, movies, TV, you see a lot of things happening and you say, boy, I want that. Commercials are phenomenal. I mean, they attract our attention. Billboards, anything. You go to the grocery store, I mean, everything's calling for you to buy it. Electronics today, my gosh, cell phone companies. Phenomenal what they've been able to market and how they market. And so I think there's all these pressures on us to automatically have stuff, instant gratification, and therefore the lessons we've learned, we've sort of shoved in the corner and said, let's just spend it.
Yeah. And I think I was watching a show once with a psychologist, and I thought, gosh, this is so true to so many situations, because he would say to the team of people on this show, that's your child self talking, because they tell themselves things like it was about food and alcohol. I deserve it. I earned it. So we have this child thing going on, telling us this battle with our child self going on.
I agree with you completely on that one, Vicki. There are so many times I sit in meetings with clients and I'll listen to what they say, and sometimes I have to keep myself from laughing, because they'll say something like, I'm entitled to this, and I'd say, well, okay, why are you entitled to that? So, well, I work hard and done. I said, yeah, so does everybody else work, but why does that make you entitled? And then they look at me kind of not real friendly, but it's true. We have a tendency to expect things, and I'm not sure where those expectations come from, but they're strong and they overcome any logic.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the book that you've developed, Gary, because this is a really neat little book. It's kind of in the vein of the One Minute Manager. It's very short, very quick, very easy to read. Tell us a little bit about the book and why you did it the way you did it.
Well, a couple things. I'm a storyteller by nature, so it's easy for me to tell stories, and these stories were real-life stories. I witnessed them, and I started keeping track of them. And finally, I was so upset one day, I just realized people just aren't getting this. And I said, how can I change that? So I started writing them down. And fortunately, my wife is a professional editor, and she got a hold of it, and she made it so someone could actually read it, Vicki, so that was good.
Well, that helped.
and we realized we had some very good stories that were interesting that maybe would impact people in a positive way.
Yeah, and you share seven really good illustrative stories here, and you've come up also with eight principles of money. I wonder if we could look at a couple of those principles. If we take nothing else from the book, what's the number one principle that we should take away from the book?
Don't spend more than you make. It's amazing. It's not rocket science, Vicki, but it may as well be. Don't spend more than you make. Incredibly simple concept and almost impossible for anyone to honor and follow.
And why do you think that is? Is it going back to the stories we're telling ourselves that we deserve it, we work hard?
I think it's part of that, and I think credit cards are a big factor. It's so easy to buy something today. In the old days, if you bought something, you had to actually pay for it. Now you can put down plastic and worry about it in 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, and it seems like, oh, I'll figure out how to pay for it later, when in reality people don't.
Yeah.
And it's just a sad, really sad state of affairs.
Mm.
I do have a good story for you, though. There was a teacher, sociology teacher, and it was an eighth grade class, and he walked into his class on the first day of school, and he wrote down the number 59 on the blackboard and circled it. And he said, "Class, this is going to be the most important thing I teach you. Please pay attention. I want you to look at this. I want you to think about it." And then he sat down, did some stuff, and then he taught class. Well, he did that every day of the week. He put down the number 59, the circle, gave him the same talk, sat down. Finally, the last day, some young man raised his hand and said, "Okay, I don't get this. What's significant about that?" And the teacher said, "Really, I've been waiting all week for someone to ask a question." He said, "The significance is that this could be the biggest thing that ever happens in your life." He said, "Because if you make 59, and then he drew the number 60 on the board and circled, he says, "You can't spend 60. And he said, "All the things I'm going to teach you, that's it."
Oh, good. It took all week for someone to ask that. That's interesting. So I love the quote in the book where it says, what did it say? "I had plastic surgery this week. I cut up all my credit cards."
Oh, yeah. That's a great line.
Yeah, and you say that the only real strategy for eliminating credit card debt is to stop buying anything but essentials.
Yes, I do. I think you have to go down to real pure needs. Eliminate wants, and in my mind, that's food, clothing, shelter, and transportation. You've mm-hmm. got to get to work. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that have to happen, and everything else becomes not quite so important.
Yeah. Now, I used to work in the financial industry. I worked there for 15 years, roundabout. And so I know that many problems and issues occur in relationships and money. I used to dread when a couple were going through a divorce because, you know, you'd kind of be stuck there in the middle trying to mediate what had happened when somebody cleaned out somebody else's bank account because they were both joint on it. And you've said that in 90% of the divorces you see that come through your office, there are money issues. You have a free download on your website, I noticed. Talk to us a little bit about that and why that's important.
Well, it's called a marriage money agreement. And the reason I did that, Vicki, was real simple. I got so tired of talking to people about their divorce and their money issues, I finally thought there's got to be something I can do to maybe slow this down. Because every spring it would be like 9 or 10 divorces, and it was very depressing, actually, because I like these people, and the next thing I know, they're coming in and splitting up their assets and arguing. So I decided there's got to be a better way, and I created this marriage money agreement, which is on my website, ifyourmoneytalked.com. And the reason I made it free is because it's really important for people to get their arms around how money works in a marriage, or at least as couples. And that's what I tried to do with that agreement. I tried to make it simple enough that people could get it, and that also simple enough that they would use it, and then complex enough that it would really work. So
right.
That was the game plan.
What do you see as being the number one issue with married couples and money? I know this agreement's about being on the same page, but when they come into you before they've gone through this...
Oh, it's phenomenal. There's a couple things that I think are so important, and I use them, I call them tips, but rules. Number one is be a good listener. Don't interrupt your partner. I mean, I just think that's critically important. I sit in these meetings, and they're kind of bantering back and forth at each other, not nicely. And you got to have respect for each other. It's not a good time for eye-rolling and belittling comments. Being honest about what you really spend, which is huge, and then the most important is be prepared to compromise. I mean, you have to be able to compromise if you're going to work this out.
Right. You say that there's one financial mistake that many, many, many people make that can have them one phone call away from financial ruin. What is that?
Not having any backup, not having any cash, not having any reserve account to handle the disaster that's about around the corner.
Right. So if somebody was in debt, they don't have a backup, what are the first steps you would advise? And I know it's going to vary on each individual situation, but generally, where would you start them?
The first thing is start paying cash for everything. And when you don't have cash, then you can't buy. So that's a great number one rule. The second thing is take some of that cash and put at least 10% away so you begin to build that reserve account. Mm. It's so important.
Something we've forgotten to do, save. We've forgotten how to save.
It's like savings. It's like I look in the dictionary, I want to make sure the word still exists. It does. I don't know what it means, but it's there. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. But, yeah, that's exactly it, Vicki. We don't save any money, and then when trouble hits, we have no way to pay for it except credit cards, and then we're dead.
Yeah, it all really stems from this instant gratification that this lifestyle that we're all ensconced in. Whether we participate in it is a whole other thing, but it certainly surrounds us everywhere in marketing and advertising.
Oh, totally. And the whole idea of instant gratification is that it's great if you can pay for it, but it's absolutely deadly if you can't.
Right, right. So,
and most people I know can't pay for it.
Yes. So we're almost at the end of our segment, Gary. What would you like to leave our listeners with today? What do you want them to take away?
Cash. Just start putting some cash away for the reserve account because it will keep so many things from disaster status to manageable. And so many clients come into my office and they just don't have any money to back up a problem. I mean, none. I mean, we're talking hundreds of dollars. They don't have it. They're living from paycheck to paycheck, and that's not a good way to live. Right. So much stress.
Right. Well, the book is called If Your Money Talked, and I just want to share this with our listeners. I read that your money says to you, I'm extremely conservative. The older I get, the more conservative I find myself to be. Getting out of debt's a nice feeling. Being able to pay off your debt is a great feeling. Having your money in a place that you can get your hands on has a calming effect and creates peace of mind. Anything else it would say to you?
No. It would just say thank you for doing that. Because it really would. That's really how I feel. I mean, if you do those things, you're going to make your life so much easier.
Right, right. And if people follow the principles in your book, I think this is a really neat little book. And having worked in the financial industry for many years myself, there's no BS in here. It's just practical, straightforward application, something we can all do. So, Gary, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate the time you spent with me.
And where can listeners find out more about you on your website?
If my website is ifyourmoneytalked.com. And that's really the best place to find information out. I'm on Amazon and iBooks and eBooks and all those things.
Super.
And they certainly should get the free download off of my website. It is actually worth the price of admission, which is free.
Absolutely. And that's called the Marriage Money Agreement.
Yes,
they can, you can download that free from Gary Surik's website, which again is ifyourmoneytalked.com. And the book is called If Your Money Talked, What Secrets Would It Tell? And Gary's brought 30 years of experience into this book for you. So thanks for being with us, Gary. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate it.
And please do stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're going to talk a little bit about naysayers. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuses, no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we were just talking about, if your money talked, what secrets would it tell, with financial planner Gary Surak. And now we're going to do a quick-fire Q&A. Eric Ryder is going to fire some questions at me, because I get a lot of questions coming in, and so what I decided to do was compile. This is a very common one that comes in about naysayers. Do you have naysayers in your life, Eric?
I think we all do. Yeah, probably, I'm probably my biggest naysayer, though. If I'm honest, it's probably me doing the biggest amount of naysaying rather than people I know. But
right. Well, that is a very, very common issue, because it's on this list of questions. I took the most common ones and compiled some of them, and then the one that I'm my worst critic, that was really common. So the whole thing is, we don't want to doubt ourselves, so let's fire away and let's look at some of the questions that came in from listeners and some of the people I've been coaching.
Sure. Why do people think it's okay to criticize my dreams or my goals?
Well, this, I can't really answer this in black and white. I could intellectualize a whole series of responses around this, but the bottom line is, people are people. And, especially when they know you well, and even sometimes when they don't know you well or even know you at all, they want to put their 10 cents in. So I think the bottom line is,
we say 2 cents in this country.
You say 2 cents.
Yeah, but okay, with the exchange rate, it's probably 10 cents over the UK. So,
10 cents is more valuable.
It's true enough.
Okay, that's funny. I didn't realize that. But, the bottom line is, they think people operate from two basic bases. And one, we know from doing many shows, they come from a base of fear and scarcity mentality, or they come from a base of love and abundance mentality. And if they're coming from that base of fear, that's when they're usually criticizing you and being negative and being down on your idea, your project, your dream, your goal, whatever it is, telling you you're not going to make it. It's usually from fear. And it could be fear that they fear you're going to be successful, or that, hey, I wanted to do that and you're going to get to do it and I'm not going to do it. Or fear that you genuinely are going to fail. So there are many different reasons there. But one of the things that I do myself, I've learned to do over the years, is just say to them, if they keep saying, well, you're going to fail and that's a stupid idea, I just say, well, that's an interesting perspective. Tell me more.
Right.
And if I really don't want to hear it, then I'll just say, thanks for sharing, which is probably not the best way to deal with it. But, yeah. I think just don't take it on board, because people will feel the need to jump in there sometimes.
True enough. All right. How about this? I find myself getting defensive when people, mostly family, belittle or criticize what I'm doing. And that is kind of related to the first question.
Absolutely.
About people criticizing their dreams. So what do you do if you're feeling just so defensive in response to that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, I go back to the basic two perspectives, that they're coming from a place of fear and scarcity mentality, or love and abundance mentality. Mm-hmm. So recognize that if they're criticizing you and they're belittling you, something's going on with them. It's really not about you. But ask yourself also why you're feeling defensive. Maybe you are secretly feeling that way yourself. Maybe you have those same doubts or fears yourself. If you feel there's merit in their comment, but they're doing it in a negative, snarky way and they're belittling you, then, I would say something like, You know, there might be merit to your comments. Could you put it in a more constructive way so I can understand better?
Right.
Or give me an example. That's the way I'd handle that.
Okay. Well, how can I prevent someone else's negativity from discouraging me? How do I respond to the comments that my goal is too risky?
Well, here is where I'd really closely, I always look at the source when somebody is saying something. Always look at the source because there's motive there.
Right.
And in this case in particular, I would really look at the source because you want to ask yourself, let's say it's some kind of financial investment or a business goal or a career change. You want to know if this person has their comments have any merit. And they're only going to have merit really if they're qualified to comment on that. So what's been their experience in this background, in this situation? Are they qualified to speak on the subject? If they don't, if they're not qualified to speak on the subject, then I, again, would just say, well, thanks for sharing and leave it at that. But if you feel that they have valued experience in whatever it is you're trying to do, then, you know, get over being defensive and ask them questions. Well, that's interesting. Why do you say that? Tell me more.
Yeah.
Because we can learn a lot from people. I know, you know, I've had over 3 career changes. And the way that you learn the most, I've found over the years, is by learning from other people's failures. When they've been in the business 5, 10, 20 years, ask them, you know, what would you have done differently?
That's good. That's good. And, you know, in some cases, they may actually be looking out for you. You know, if your dream is to win the lottery and you're like, I'm going to take all my money and spend it on winning lottery on lottery tickets so I can win the lottery. They say, well, that might not be the best way to invest your money. They might actually be looking out for you. So
they might be.
Something
this is why
consider.
I say you have to evaluate, is there merit in their comment?
Well, why can it be dangerous to always look for someone else's approval or opinion?
Well, a number of reasons there. We all know people who just want to criticize and have never really accomplished very much themselves, who want to hold you back for whatever personal reasons they may have. So, you know, do you really want to live your life based on their opinion and their approval? Of course not. You want to live the life that you want to live. Probably the biggest reason, another, well, I'd say equally as important, is we all know that personal fulfillment and life purpose is critical to happiness. I mean, study after study after study comes back with you have to feel fulfilled, you have to feel you have purpose in life. And if you're not living the dream that you want to live, the life that you want to live, following the passion and the pursuit that you want to pursue, then of course you're going to start feeling resentful. You're going to end up probably feeling bitter, which of course leads to disease in the body. And we all know where that's going to go. So we don't want to suppress our emotions. We want to live out loud.
Well, coming right back to where we started this segment with me saying that I was probably my biggest naysayer when it comes to, you know, going forward on my dreams. I'm my own worst critic. How do I turn that around?
Well, first of all, you've got to become really conscious of what you're saying to yourself. And this is a hard one to beat, because if you're in the loop of, you know, having done this since you were could think, then it is hard to beat. But you have to just become very conscious of everything that's going on in that head and just... I gave mine a name when I was practicing getting rid of mine. And I called my little chatterbox up here that kept saying, you know, you're stupid, you're too whatever, you're not this, you're not accomplished enough. I called him Gollum. And so I started telling him, when I became conscious of this voice in my head with all this negative chat going on, I started telling him, thanks for sharing, Gollum, now go away. And of course I'm accomplished. And just rephrasing that and putting it into a positive affirmation. So do you think you can work on that, Eric?
I'll try.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Melinda Emerson, the small business lady. Stay with us.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki Sinclair, when award-winning journalist Caitlin Kelly couldn't find a regular journalism job, she spent her 50th year doing something she never thought she'd do. She tells what it's like for midlife, mid-career professionals who have to make drastic life changes and how that led to her latest book. We'll also hear from Catherine Caputa, the branding expert behind iHeart New York, who says thinking small can lead to huge success. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki Sinclair every Monday at New Pacific and find dozens of free podcasts on conversationslive.net. Follow Vicki on Twitter at Vicki Sinclair.
Hi, this is Vicki Sinclair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki Sinclair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki Sinclair.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki Sinclair. And coming up next, I'm going to be talking with Melinda Emerson, a.k.a. the Small Business Lady. She's a dynamic author, speaker, and small business coach, and her areas of expertise include small business startup, business development, social media marketing. And she's also the CEO of Quintessence Multimedia, where she develops audio, video, and written content to help Fortune 500 clients engage small business customers. Melinda's a weekly columnist for the You're the Boss blog for the New York Times. She publishes also a resource blog on which is syndicated by the Huffington Post, and that's succeedasyourownboss.com. And Melinda's been featured on MSNBC, Fox News, NBC Nightly News, and in the Washington Post, Fortune Essence, and Black Enterprise. Forbes magazine named Melinda the number one woman. Okay, sorry, I'm just questioning something on here. Forbes magazine named Melinda as the number one woman for entrepreneurs to follow on Twitter. She's also the author of the best-selling book, Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months, a month-by-month guide to business that works. And we have Melinda here with us.
Yes, we do. How you doing, Vicki?
I'm doing terrific, Melinda. How are you?
I am great. I am great. You know, I love talking about how to start, grow successful small businesses, so I'm doing good.
Well, I know that your mission as a small business coach is to end small business failure. But before we get into that, Melinda, I would just love to share a little of your background with our listeners so that they know a little bit more about you and where you're coming from. And I know that you used to work, you were a producer in TV news. You said your personality didn't quite jibe with all the politics that was going on. So talk to us a little bit about how you got from there to doing what you're doing now.
Well, you know, when you are a producer in television news, you write a lot about murders and fires. And for me, I knew that I was meant to do more than that. And I also realized that I needed to learn the business, which is what I did. But I always knew, even before I started as a producer, that one day I wanted to own my own television production company. And I was inspired by this woman. You may have heard of her. Her name is Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, yeah, the Oprah woman, right?
Yeah. You know, and literally, Oprah Winfrey started Harpo Studios when I was in college. And that was the first time it ever got into my brain that I could be an entrepreneur, too. I could control my own creative product. But I knew I had to learn the business, so I went into TV news, which is such a grind. I mean, it's a hard job, it's a lot of hours, and it's frankly kind of thankless, too. So when you work in a big market like Philadelphia, where I ended my TV career, you know, it's if it bleeds, it leads, you know, and I just I got to get out of here, you know. So in 1998, I started my company, and in 1999, I left full-time to pursue my dream of owning my own production company, which I still have to this day. It's now really a social media marketing consulting firm. And we still do content development, but it's really around social media strategy. And it's called Quintessence Multimedia. And, you know, the good thing about starting a company when you're really young is I was clear that there were people that had forgotten more about business than what I knew. And so I made it my business to take a class every single year I was in business. I did Leadership, Inc. I did the Urban League Leadership Institute. I did the Prudential Young Entrepreneurs Training Program. I did the E200 program with the SBA. I even went to Dartmouth College and Harvard, actually, and even the University of Virginia to take courses on how to be a better entrepreneur. And that has turned out to be the best investment I ever could have made. Because let me tell you something, you have to grow yourself to grow your business.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes,
so
you
if
do.
The last time you were in a college was when someone was handing you, you know, a diploma, and that was 15, 16, 20, 25 years ago, you were in trouble.
Yes, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so I decided after all of this great learning that I got that what I needed to do was help people not make all of the expensive mistakes that I made. And literally, that's why I wrote Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months, because I figured it out. Everybody's got good ideas. The problem is people don't know how to run a business.
Right. And you chose...
So what I did was just gave them the blueprint. I wrote the book I never read. I'm a voracious reader. And I wrote the book that I wish somebody had written for me 13, 14 years ago.
Right. And you did you opened your business, I read, in 3 months. But you decided 12 months because you don't want to set people up for failure. And some people need to gradually save money and to be able to walk away from their job. I mean, it's different if you're laid off and, hey, you've got to make a decision. But if we have the time, then the planning
Absolutely.
Is worth
but
everything.
But the biggest reason why is because it takes 18 to 36 months for a small business to break even, let alone replace somebody's corporate salary. And that's the reason why I give them a 12-month head start, because the reality is the money to start your business is going to come from your right or your left pocket. So people have to get clear that they're going to have to pare back their lifestyle, because people with savings, those are the people that have the ability to start a business. If you start your business in a hole, that's where you're going to stay.
Right, right. I want to talk about, I love your work because you're just so very honest. I've seen some of your videos floating around on YouTube and various places. But you say that you made a mistake. You just talked about Quintessence Multimedia, your first production company. You said you made a mistake in that business early on, and that was that you did not niche market quickly enough. So talk to us a little bit about why you think that's so important.
Oh, my gosh. Let me tell you something. When you start out in business, there's two things you know for sure. You got limited time and limited resources. So with that in mind, you have to focus. And the most important place where you have to focus is in your marketing efforts. It's so much easier to hit a target when you know what you're shooting for. In my business, my first business, Quintessence Multimedia, I was chasing four or five different verticals at the same time. I was trying to do business with the government. I was trying to do business with the advertising industry. I was doing business with telecom and pharmaceutical. And really, literally, it wasn't until I focused in on the healthcare and pharmaceutical industry that my business started to take off.
Mm.
But I wasted a whole bunch of time and a whole bunch of money chasing stuff I never should have been chasing.
Yeah, I heard you say you were just chasing ambulances, basically. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think so many people do that when they go in. It's like they see any client as a good client. And I think it's not until you come to the realization that you do have a niche client that success starts happening for people, really.
Well, the way I tell people is, who makes more money, your cardiologist or your primary care physician, right?
Yeah.
Cardiologists drive Lamborghinis, right?
I mean,
that's what you have to understand. People, particularly in today's economy, people want to hire specialists, people that specialize in solving their problem every day. Does the world need yet another graphic design company? No, they do not. But the world needs a graphic design company that specializes in developing educational materials. That company can get work every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the difference. I mean, really, it boils down to five things, right? There are five reasons why small businesses fail, right? The number one reason is because people do not have a life plan before they start their business. People have what I call fantasies of grandeur about starting a business. They're going to be off every Friday. They're going to have light hours in the summer. Oh, no, 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 no. In the first few years of a business, your business owns you.
Well, you equated it to having a child in the first 5 years of a child's life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That your baby needs everything. You got to wake up and feed it. You got to change the Pampers. You got to make sure you got enough formula. You got to know how to warm the formula up. It's the same kind of thing in a business. But then the second reason why small businesses fail is because people have no network to sell to. It's astonishing to me how often people with no friends will start a business. Right?
Right, right.
90% of all small businesses get business from referrals. So if you don't have any friends, you're not going to have any business because your business can only go as far as your arm can reach.
Right. I that reminds me of Harvey McKay's Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. He talks a lot about, you know, getting that network around you before you ever need it.
Absolutely. And be constantly networking because that's how you feed the beast, right? That's how you keep your network, keep your marketing going is from the new contacts you can make, right?
Right, right, right.
And then the third reason why small businesses fail is because people do not save enough money before they start their business. So what happens is some emergency in their personal life will torpedo their entrepreneurial dreams. You need to make business decisions based upon what's going on in your business, not what's going on with the debt collectors calling you. Get rid of them credit cards before you start your business, please. You cannot take the pressure, not in the first few years. And then the fourth reason why small businesses fail is because people try to sell to anybody that they think has money, as opposed to having a specific niche target customer. You can become rich if you niche. That's what I want you to remember. If you don't remember anything else I say, get your riches in the niches, okay? Figure it out. Figure out how there's a slither of the market that you can own, and you need to become the czarina of that, and you will be paid, and you will have customers for life as well. But the fifth reason, and this is the deadliest reason, Vicki, people don't manage their household with a budget. So guess what?
You don't manage their business with a budget.
That's right. And successful businesses are run based on up-to-date financial information. Your cash flow problem should not be a surprise to you. You should not be going to see the tax man whenever it's tax time. You should be talking to an accounting professional every month so that you know what's going on. And yeah, where you need to make adjustments. And you should not spend a dollar in a vending machine that's not in a budget.
Absolutely. And I want to, we're going to take a quick break, Melinda. When we come back, I want to ask you about what makes a good entrepreneurial mindset, because a lot of people think they want to be an entrepreneur, but there are certain characteristics that need to be there. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair today, and my guest is Melinda Emerson, a.k.a. Small Business Lady. I'm also going to ask Melinda how Twitter helped skyrocket her business. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
OMG! Grammar abuses, no, LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And if you're not feeling energized, I'm sure my guest is going to get you energized by the end of the hour. There is no doubt in my mind that Melinda Emerson is passionate about what she talks about her business. And thank goodness for that. She's also known as Small Business Lady. She's an author, speaker, small business coach, and her mission is to end small business failure. So I want to talk to you a little about, first of all, let's talk about what happened with Twitter for you and how that exploded.
Well, Twitter for me, you know, is how I even became the small biz lady, right? So
right.
What happened to me was I wrote my book, Become Your Own Boss, in 12 months in 2008. It was due to my publisher September 1st, 2008. Well, you remember what happened in the world in 2008, right? The sky fell, you know, people's
right.
401ks returned 10Ks, you know. So my publisher came to me and said, look, kid, thank you so much for turning your book on time, but we are going to postpone it until March of 2010 because we don't think anybody's thinking about entrepreneurship right now. Now, thousands and thousands of people were losing their jobs, and they didn't think anybody was thinking about entrepreneurship.
I think more people than ever were thinking about entrepreneurship.
But that's okay. You know, they were like, look, we know the publishing industry. We're going to publish your book in March of 2010. So I was sitting here trying to get ready for a big national book tour that I thought I was about to go on when basically they dumped me on my head and said, okay, 18 months from now, we're going to release your book. So I had to figure out what to do. And somebody once told me that Bill Gates said that if he had $2 left in the world, he would spend $1 on PR. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess since I got $5 left in the world, that's what I'm going to do, right? So I literally hired a publicist, a woman who specialized in book publicity, and she happened to also be a social media expert. Her name is Kathy Web Savvy PR, and that's her Twitter handle anyhow. And she said to me, after I told her my sad little story, she said, you know what? I think Twitter is where we need to go for you and your brand, and we're going to promote that book like it's coming out tomorrow, but we're going to make sure that people are clamoring for it by the time it comes out because we're going to brand you on Twitter. And back then, I was like, what is Twitter, right? I mean, literally, I didn't know
right,
what she was talking
right.
about. And so, but you've seen the movie The Matrix, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember in The Matrix when Neo figured out he was the one?
Right, right.
All right, so that's what it felt like when I started using Twitter, right? So it felt like Double Dutch at first. Like it was moving so fast, I couldn't get in. I didn't know what was going on. But once I figured it out and figured out that all you needed to do to be successful with Twitter was help people, and that's my natural disposition anyway, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I got on Twitter 3 times a day. I tweeted out a helpful article written, you know, Inc. or Entrepreneur or something. I found a helpful small business article. I tweeted something personal about myself every day, and I answered somebody's small business question every day for 4 months. Then after that, I launched Small Biz Chat, which I host every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where I answer people's small business questions every single week on Twitter. I bring in another small business expert on a specific topic,
mm-hmm.
and we do it every single week. I've done it for 3.5 years.
Wow.
I've had everybody you can imagine. I've had Gerber on. I've had David Allen on. Peter Shankman. You name somebody, I've had them on, right? And now what happens is whenever somebody's got a new business book out, they stalk me to get on Small Biz Chat, right?
So, right, right.
But what that did was that made me a resource. And whenever you are the convener of anything, you control the conversation. So it positioned me, and people started to look to me for a resource. Then after I started Small Biz Chat, I started blogging. I launched my blog, SucceedAsYourOwnBoss.com. which I post to 3 times a week and give out helpful information about how to start and how to grow a business.
Yeah. So you are the expert anyway. You've had a lot of experience here, but then it's important to have that platform to establish yourself as the expert on.
Absolutely. I mean, by the time my book came out, I had 10,000 followers on Twitter.
Right.
Now
right.
I think today I got, I don't know, over 160,000 on my one account. I got another 25,000 on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So It really has become something. It took on a life of its own.
It's interesting because I know, like many other small entrepreneurs, you know, I resisted it because I'm like, it just takes too much time. But you can work it into your day. You just say, do it on your own schedule, not on Twitter's schedule.
Absolutely. And here's what I do. I give it about 45 minutes a day, mm-hmm. except for Wednesdays, because Wednesday is the day I do Small Biz Chat. So I give it about 90 minutes. That day, so probably altogether about 2 or 3 hours on Wednesday, because my chat takes an hour by itself, right? So, but I do it in the morning. I do it on using Hootsuite, which is a third-party client that I push content to all my social media accounts off of that. And I keep it moving. I am not on Twitter all day. It looks like I am, but I'm not.
Right, right. Well, let's talk. We don't have much time left. I want to talk about the entrepreneurial mindset, because you have some very specific parameters about what makes up an entrepreneurial mindset. You know, many people think, oh, I'd love to have my own business, or I'm very entrepreneurial. But when your butt is on the line and your roof is on the line, you've got to keep that roof over your head. It becomes a whole different thing. So talk to us a little bit about a couple of the things that you make up a good entrepreneurial mindset. One of them is you say you always, you must always think there's a better way to do things. You're just constantly inquisitive.
You have to be someone that can see an opportunity in anything, right? But the second thing you've got to do is you got to be flexible. Successful entrepreneurs weave and bend and understand that their clients change, their clients' needs change, and they better be changing. The third thing you got to be is a lifelong learner. If you already know everything, you better keep your job. Because when you are an entrepreneur, you're on a spiritual journey as much as anything else. And you have to keep reading. You have to keep going to conferences. You have to keep evolving yourself, because that's the key to everything else.
Now, I want to go back and remind listeners that we talked about niche to get rich. How did you define your niche for yourself?
Well, I am really focused on helping professional women 25 to 54 transition from having a job to starting a business.
So you're very, very specific there.
I can get you deeper than that. These people are married, they have children, and most of them are religious.
Interesting.
I know exactly who my customer is. That's 82% of who clicks on my blog. And everybody else listening to us better know that much about their customer, too.
Yeah, interesting. Your book is full of great information. Your website is packed full of articles on just about every topic you can think of to do with small business. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Melinda?
I want you to focus on who your paying customer is. If you focus on who that customer is, everything else will make so much sense in your business.
Mm. And the best website for people, you've got a couple, maybe you want to give both of them out.
If you want to reach me, Google Small Biz Lady. You can reach me as that on Twitter. You can reach me as Small Biz Lady on Facebook. My blog is SucceedAsYourOwnBoss.com. You also can grab my book anywhere books are sold, Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months. If you want an autographed copy, go to my website and purchase it there, and I get them out within 2 to 4 weeks. You'll get your book for sure.
There we go. I want to know, since you're so passionate, in about 30 seconds, what keeps you so energized?
I love entrepreneurs. I do this because all of you have great ideas. I just want to help you execute your business and run your business better. And that's what drives me.
Well, I thank you for being with us today, Melinda. Pleasure talking with you.
It was my pleasure, Vicki. I'd love to come back anytime.
Yeah. And again, Melinda's book is Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months. It's a month-by-month guide to a business that works. If you're in a job right now, you can pick up the book and start planning your exit strategy. There you go. And we'll be back next week with an all-new live show. And if you've got feedback on today's show or comments or questions for any of our guests, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net. That's info@conversationslive.net. You can also reach me by phone at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And, of course, you can check out dozens of free podcasts at conversationslive.net. And there is an article based around the naysayer segment we did earlier today. If you'd like the full article, you can email me info@conversationslive.net, and I'll send it to you. If you don't have email, call the 800 number, and I'll be happy to slip that in the post to you. Thanks for being with us today. I appreciate you spending this hour with us. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, when award-winning journalist Caitlin Kelly couldn't find a regular journalism job, she spent her 50th year doing something she never thought she'd do. She tells what it's like for midlife, mid-career professionals who have to make drastic life changes and how that led to her latest book. We'll also hear from Catherine Caputa, the branding expert behind iHeart New York, who says thinking small can lead to huge success. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair every Monday at Pacific and find dozens of free podcasts on conversationslive.net. Follow Vicky on Twitter @VickySinclair.